Hi, everyone. Welcome to Iterate. I'm Rene Ritchie from iMore, and we are joined by an illustrious panel of designers tonight. We have Nevin Murgan with us from Panic. How are you, Nevin?
Very well, very well.
We also have Louis Mantilla and Brad Ellis from Pacific Helm. How are you guys?
Hey, super great.
And we have Chris Clark, Clarko, joining us, who's actually with them right now. How are you, Clarko?
I'm very well, thank you.
So let's start right at the beginning. It's WWDC 2013. Tim Cook comes on stage and he introduces iOS 7 and then smash cut to the Johnny Ive video. Louis, back before Macworld even, the first thing I was told about iOS 7 is that you specifically were not going to like it.
I told you that I wasn't going to like it?
No, I heard from other people that you weren't going
to
like it.
That's right. I was told to get a therapist immediately.
You were singled out. So what was your take on it when you started seeing the screens come up one after the other? What was your first impression?
Well, I didn't want to jump to any conclusions because I figured everyone was going to do that for me. So this time I kind of just waited for everything to finish, and then I didn't think about it for a few days.
We should also say Louis was on vacation.
I was on vacation.
So he was delightfully distracted. Anything else.
Yeah, the only time I saw you at WWC, Louis, when you were about to jump in a cab saying, I don't want to talk about it, I'll be back later.
That's right. That is actually exactly what happened.
So you've had a few days now. What's your first impression?
So, I mean, I installed it on my own device, which is, you know, probably stupid. But, you know, I did it anyway because I figured I'd give it a go.
Crazy.
And, you know, I don't mind as much as I thought I would at first. I think for the most part, I mean, all the interactions and everything, it's all good. Like all the symbology, like the toolbar icons and everything are really wonderful. So I have a generally positive reaction to most of it, I think.
What about you, Nevin?
Let's see where to begin. At WWDC, I was surprised by the extent of the changes because the day before I had heard from some people who saw it that it's like, oh, you know, it's, you know, I like most of it. It's not that big a deal. And I thought it was a huge deal when I first saw it. I thought it was a way bigger change than I expected. I installed it on my own device also because I'm also an idiot. And I've been living with it for a week. a few parts of it have grown on me. Functionally, a lot of it is fantastic. Like the presence of that control center thing just changes the way I use my phone all the time. Things like that are great. I have sort of short-term concerns and I have long-term concerns. Short-term ones are like where I, you know, nitpick kind of like, well, this icon isn't great than that thing. And then long-term, I feel like I'm also kind of, I'm trying to extrapolate what does this mean for the platform? What do iOS apps and the iOS platform look like, you know, 2 years from now, assuming this look is what we're going to get. And I'm kind of like, I wouldn't say I'm worried, but it kind of is making me reconsider it, you know.
Brad?
Just my general thoughts on the new release.
Yep.
I think it's exciting because this is what I do for a living is to design apps. And it's fun to kind of get to do something different. We've had the Aqua aesthetic now since, what was that, like the late 90s?
When did that? 2001.
Since disco was still popular.
Since disco was popular and Carter was president. So it's been a while that we've been hanging out with one style. And we've, you know, me and Louis have made a couple Android apps and we've done that, you know, and had to like play with a different style. And that's been interesting, like an interesting challenge. And it's fun that now we definitely have to do a different style. And then the other thing that's interesting to watch as a trajectory is to see how long it takes people to say that they want to go into a different direction. Just say, screw it. I'm still going to put textures in there. By the time we first got an SDK, we were already over the default Chrome look. And so immediately at the gate, when we started doing third-party apps, we were already using the tint color to change the nav bar, like just right away. Mm-hmm. And so now we're at an interesting position because we get to make apps for the same time as a new style coming out. And so that's like a little bit of a different situation. I assume that we'll get super bored of it immediately. Me and Louis, yesterday actually, we took one of the apps that we're working on right now for a client and then kind of skinned it in exactly the iOS 7 style just to see what that would look like. And we didn't like it. So we're trying to figure out like, how do we keep it kind of looking like iOS 7, but move in a direction where I'm not getting confused at like all the fields of white and all the data kind of melding together. Like, how do I change this already?
It's going to be an interesting time. I feel like it's been our job for so long to just dissect the patterns of the OS. And like we've been doing it for 5 years now. We're really used to like, how things all fit together to give us like, you know, to give us an affordance for tapping and to know that this is a navigational tap instead of an action tap. And they reset a lot of that stuff. And it's upsetting to like just have kind of the rug pulled out from under you. But, and it also presents a big challenge because when it's just like, I feel like I've kind of threw down the gauntlet and just said, all right, we're taking away all your pretty pixels. Now it's time to just like make it work cooler. You guys have been focused way too long on throwing textures in there and you've been using just kind of stock interactions. Why aren't you innovating on interactions? And so now they're being forced in that direction.
So they mentioned three big tenets for the new design. One was clarity. The next was deference, and the last was depth. And I think it's easiest if we tackle them in reverse order because the first is likely to be the most controversial. Louis, what did you think of the depth of the layered effects and the levels that they showed off from wallpaper to icon to notification center?
So I think it's much more clever and a much better aesthetic than the linen kind of being on three different levels. I mean, because technically the linen was underneath, on top, or actually in any app as the background. So now having something that is just like these glass panes that are on the top, or like all of these like panes being independent, I think is actually really great. However, kind of in using this, I've noticed something interesting, which is that in certain situations, the pane looks to be beside another pane, and on other instances, it seems to be above. So like when multitasking, you can see like all of the apps are beside each other. But when you launch an app, all of the icons on the home screen launch together. They all kind of like zoom toward the screen, which if Twitter was next to Facebook and you launch Twitter, it looks like Facebook is adjacent to it. But when you go into multitasking, of course, it's not. And that's the part where I feel is weird. And I don't think that most people will have a problem with it per se, just because it's a very cute animation. But there are some like fundamental problems with doing like depth like that. So that's the only concern I have. Otherwise, I think it's really cute.
Yeah, you're kind of like, when is it an animation and when is it a transition?
Right.
And where's that kind of line in there? Because that was, we had pushed to the right or to the left for navigation stacks, and that was important. It wasn't just to be pretty. Right. It was to define a space.
Right.
And so your problem is that when it's zooming into the icons, your brain is like, well, this is defining a space, and it's not. It's just an animation,
right. Yeah.
Just moving us into the next thing. It's interesting. I don't think it's a problem. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I hadn't thought of it if you hadn't pointed it out.
No, I know. I just kind of came in this morning and was thinking about it because I noticed it after using it for a little while. When you go between different transitions or animations or whatever, you know, they end up actually being, it's interesting when you see Safari live alongside music or mail in the dock, and then you multitask over and the home screen is actually beside the previous one when you know it just came from that. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's like 60% of the way to being like a zooming UI, but it's not quite zooming. It doesn't maintain its spatiality when you're zoomed right in.
You can't throw away home screen, which is a different behavior than all the other apps.
That's true. And we noticed an interesting interaction with Newsstand. That Newsstand actually replaces the home screen when you're in the multitasking area, which is kind of fascinating.
Like kind of how it used to pretend to be a folder. Now it's still pretending to be a folder, even though it thankfully can be put inside folders now.
It's Schrodinger's app. Nevin, what do you think about, I mean, previous generations of iOS, the physics were animated. You know, you kind of moved things around in a way that looked normal, and now they've gone and gotten an actual game designer to build a physics and particle engine, and they're sort of just letting you move stuff around in that space.
I have to say, given that depth is one of the three, let's also take the whole physics thing. Given that they've given it such prominence in the WWDC talks, I'm not sure that I see a lot of that in the apps. This might sound silly, but you know, you mentioned that, for instance, Notification Center and Control Center are two things that sort of give this glassy depth. And that's fine. But unfortunately, this isn't something that informs the platform a lot, because I'm not sure if the message is that our apps should also implement panels like that. Because if we do that, you run the risk of having like 7 glass panels on top of each other. You know, if my app implements them and then the user puts, you know, Control Center over that, you know what I mean? They feel like they're reserved for system level features, and that depth lives there. And if you put it in your app also, we're going to end up with like super loopy 3 blurred views on top of blurred views. So that's one thing that I'm kind of not sure what Apple is, you know, trying to say. And then with animation, I feel like I'm also hearing a lot of people say how this uses animation much more for richness. And I'm just not seeing it, to be honest. Like, you know, the messages app, for instance, the message bubbles sort of have this little bit of like inertia, like weight as you scroll. But that's such a subtle effect, and it's seen in such a rarely used action that to me, it just doesn't seem to add that much personality to the app. So just in regular use, I'm not seeing that much of it. And I'm wondering, do they want to add more? Do they want us to add more? I'm not totally sure what they're saying to developers.
It is interesting, though, because like a lot of the Quartz Composer debacle conversations, I at least from my side, were because people wanted to do stuff like chat heads. And they wanted to do, you know, crazy, bouncy, momentum scrolling, jiggly things. And I felt a lot of demand for that. And so it is nice that at least that's the thing that we can do without having to write a physics engine.
Right. And there are things like the classic iPad Photos app, where you can tap a stack of photos and it explodes out to a grid of photos. Or you can pinch that same grid to get like an interactive view on that. That kind of thing was, you know, something that we've wanted to do from day one as third-party developers. And it's technically possible, but it's also very hard. And especially when you're working in contract land, you're trying to convince your client to spend extra money just for the sake of this cool little pinchy animation. They're very rarely likely to do it when it's just a complete unknown. It might perform poorly, or it might just not turn out how they want. And my understanding, and I'm not breaking NDA because I don't even know if this is a fact,
all right,
is that that kind of thing is easier now because of the physics, that like you can do like the iPad Photos pinchy stack thing like a hell of a lot more easily than you ever could before.
Interesting.
Does the parallax, Chris, does that help you with usability at all, or is that just a special effect?
I think it's cute. A bunch of people, you hand them the phone and they just immediately flip out. They're like, oh my god, stuff is moving. I don't know. It's cute and it's not bugging me. And I don't think it's hurting anyone.
And Brad, my lock screen wallpaper is alive. The bubbles move around and knock into each other. And
oh, yeah. And I asked how to make those, and they said, no, that's how.
But it's interesting that you'd want to. Like, you enjoy them enough that you'd like to do that.
Well, that's because, like, as an artist, as an individual who needs to make a living, I enjoy charging people for things that I can do. And one of the things that I love about that is that I can actually make something that you can't, and I can sell it to you. And that's what I liked about like those crazy bubble things, right? Because like a wallpaper, you just can't charge for that.
But a dynamic wallpaper.
But a dynamic wallpaper, yeah. A video wallpaper, like all that stuff, I can charge for that.
Does this mean we're going to be stuck with just these two dynamic wallpapers till the end of time?
God, I hope you are.
Are they going
to
pull?
That's what blows my mind. Why ship the feature if they're going to? I mean, obviously this is the first build, but even if they make 5, still, like, why have a feature where you pick from 5 presets, right?
In both of the two that they offer right now are terribly similar.
Yeah.
It's Aqua and Graphite.
Yeah, really.
Is there any user content that they could grab, where a user can make their own wallpaper? And like, you know, it does some auto magic on the back end from a photo or whatever, or your
The TIFF format has layering in it. You could theoretically do a layered TIFF and it will just equally distribute the layers and then parallax those. That could be a thing you do.
You know what I mean by user though? Like the end user, like, you know, a civilian. Like, you know, is there any data
they selected
that
a bunch of photos and perhaps we could do something clever with that.
Right, exactly.
Origami transitions.
That's right.
Word of the day, screensaver. Actually, I
would. RSS screensaver.
Actually, that'd be, come on, that'd be cool.
Word of the day lock screen?
Yeah, and it like sweeps forward when you open it up. Yeah, we would love that.
That would be great.
And it's doable. The way that they built the current fun ones is you can do that. like now that they've built the functionality in to do interactive 3D multiple level depth things, we can now do anything in the lock screen. Like it's technically possible, mm-hmm. even if they don't let us do it.
Well, and the home screen by
Right. So you think I haven't heard what's on the inside of this stuff. Is it basically like what widgets will eventually be? It's its own development environment, this lock screen dynamic wallpaper business?
No, it's one of the internal tools that we're not allowed to have.
Gotcha.
It's like the new Quartz Composer equivalent inside Apple is the framework with which these have been built. So theoretically you could build any project file with that and slap it on as a home screen.
So you think jailbreakers are going to go in, pull out the dynamic home screens that are there and just kind of try and reverse engineer the file format?
That would be sick.
Also, for designers listening to this, you're saying, oh my God, is Apple going to ship this Quartz Composer type tool? And it was described to me as like Quartz Composer on steroids. I was told that there is no way in hell this is going to ship as a developer product, unfortunately.
Womp womp.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's like Apple's secret mojo right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It totally is.
So this depth thing, there's one thing that's bothering me about these layers.
And just what?
it's that Control Center is this ultra bright panel, maybe frosted glass, and Notification Center is this dark frosted panel. And I don't know why they look different. They seem to me to be on the same Z plane because they can't occupy the same space at the same time.
I guess just to separate them, right? One is frosted glass, the other one is smoked, just sort of like so you have a sense of which one you're in. I don't know.
Makes me sad.
Yeah, that was always the argument for why all the apps look different, but now all the apps look the same.
Yeah.
Louis, I want to go back to something you mentioned about, I think it was you, about the zooming of apps and the layers for apps. Apple was very careful to show several times when you tap on an app, the entire screen zooms up, and when you go out, the entire screen zooms away. Yet when you open the phone for the first time, all the different icons kind of fly in Battlestar Galactica-like with a staggered formation. It seems inconsistent that, you know, you'd have this lock and zoom instead of holding the text and background in place and just zooming the icon up into the full screen app.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think Brad was just saying it correctly, which is that they're really cute and they exist and they happen, but they're not necessarily trying to inform a user too much of where their app is in like a Z space or just really in 3D land in general, X, Y, and Z, whether it's up, down, left, right, you know, back and forth. I mean,
oh, and you know, for that unlock animation that they did hundreds of different stupid things.
They did hundreds of them, and you know, it was just them being like, "Look what we can do! Look at this, this is cool. It's we can make them flip around diagonally if we wanted." You know, and
someone was just like, "This is the logical one. We need to ship it because this is logical and consistent with the Z metaphor we created."
And then someone just threw a cheese ball at him from across the other side of the table.
Totally. Yep.
And then, nope, we're shipping this one. The thing that our friend C-Bounce was mad about. Is that
he was mad about something.
Surprise.
He was like, I know where the messages icon's going to be. It's going to be in the bottom left corner. And like the minute that they start animating in, I want to just touch it. Like I'm just trying to touch it. You can't touch them until they all stop moving.
Such reflexes.
I know, right?
Like I'm bothered by how slow a lot of these animations are.
I assume
they're going to get faster.
That's a wise. Like watch it. Look at that.
Oh, okay.
That's a while when you know it's there.
It's a 1-0 symptom, not so much of you know, performance in terms of programming, but of people relishing their own animation. And as they say, for any transition, after you've done it and you're happy with it, you should cut its time in half. Just because you want to see every frame of it, the user doesn't.
Yeah. It reminds me a little of OS X. Like in the early days, they wouldn't drop frames in the minimization animation.
Yeah.
All those animations were ultra gated by the hardware, and eventually they're just like, actually, you know what's more important? It's being snappy.
So the last sort of area of depth that I think is worth touching on is the lock screen itself, because you know this seems to sit above the home screen, but Notification Center and Control Center can both come up on top of it. You have the camera you can drag up, which seems to be below it, and then you have slide to unlock is just text with arrows pointing above and below it, but nothing sideways. Is that just something caught in mid-transition, or is that, you know, Apple sort of trying to figure out how they want to mesh all these gestures together?
I think they just need a different way to do everything. And they know that left and right have to be like, you know, slide down lock. And they know that down has to be notification center, up is control center. And then they're like, well, we still want to have that camera functionality because you can do control center and then hit the camera button. It's in the same spot. But, you know, if you notice the camera transition, it's not actually pushing up as much as masking the entire home screen.
Yeah.
So it's not really that it's underneath it. It's that it's taking the same space. So that one seems more like that it's occupying the same Z order. But I think it's just that they needed to have four different kind of swipe gestures on one screen. And they needed to make sure that you could do it from all edges.
Well, they're not even using one of the directions.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they're not using right to left. Which is weird, because it says slide to unlock. There's no arrow indicating anymore. Mm-hmm. There's just like a subtle animation across the text, which is, by the way, very cool because it's like a diagonal, like more shimmery one, which is very neat. But yeah, you can't go right to left, which I find odd.
Yeah, I can't believe that this is just like transitional and they're just figuring it out. The lock screen is one of those things that they probably tried to nail down a really long time ago. And like the bounce of the little chevrons.
It's super cute. It's also really easy to prototype it up and then like give it to your mom and see what she does without like anything leaking about future plans.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, I witnessed an Apple engineer being told that the slide to unlock thing is confusing given the up pointing arrow below it. And it took the engineer a few seconds to understand what the problem was. And then when they understood it, they went, oh, I didn't think of that. And that kind of freaked me out a little.
I heard the same sort of story. I haven't had that problem myself. And I think that's just because we've been using this OS for the past like 6 years. So we're all very familiar with it. And I think that's probably all of us sitting here, which is like, we'll all be okay with whatever happens because we're all used to enough of these interactions. I really want to know though, how a person like, you know, completely virgin to iOS, you know, reacts to seeing slide to unlock and seeing that little arrow.
Is there a sort of a type of change aversion that because it is so different, your initial reaction is to look at it as strange and weird and not what you're used to?
Probably.
That's a real thing, yeah. I think that's a medical condition.
Well, I mean, Chris, you did a whole article on that, and I think you articulated it really well, but it was just that initial response on that first day seeing everything that was different.
Yeah, that's more general phenomenon, but I get what you're getting at, where it's like, because it looks so different, you might imagine that it is completely different, like that none of your old assumptions should hold true. But those chevrons are really just really strong affordances for sliding up, and everyone makes that mistake once. I mean, I think everyone their first time just kind of goes, oh shit, I forgot what it means to open my phone. And after day one, you've got it, but it's still, that is a bad first impression.
Well, it's because there's Android phones that do that. That's why.
Right.
Also, WebOS does that. BlackBerry 10. Almost everyone but iOS does the swipe up now to get to the multitasking or to get to the home screen. If we move from depth to getting out of the way. So part of it was they wanted to, you know, make the content the hero and make your apps the hero. They were very deliberate about that. They wanted to take away all the Chrome, the hat and the boots that were on the old version of UIKit. Brad, did they succeed at that? Does this interface sort of distract less than previous interfaces?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, it's one of those, though, where like when I go to a website, I don't see the ads anymore because like my brain has learned to filter out the ads to such a great extent that when I started using the Vine application and they had a banner at the top that had like some hot air balloons and like a whatever. And all that banner said was like, you should link this to your Facebook to find more friends. And like, because of its detailed richness, I didn't see it. Like it disappeared from the interface. And so like when I'm looking at a normal piece of UI, like I don't see the status bar anymore. That goes away. It's gone. And like nav bars, like I'm looking at in the Photos app, for instance, like the nav bars that are translucent just leave. They go away from me. Whereas now with the new status bar, like I see it, but that's just because like my brain's wired a little bit differently now. Like when I see a box that doesn't have a gradient on it, I actually see a gradient going the other direction because I've just literally seen so many boxes with gradients on them. So hopefully that'll fade away. Otherwise I'll be screwed.
Well, it's banner blindness.
Banner blindness.
You just got to work on blinding yourself.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I do like the general cleanliness of the calendar. For instance, that one's one of the ones that was like the most gross and like clearly a 1x to 2x port.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love the detail in the calendar app, for instance, like just couldn't have been there in 1x land. Like all,
you right, know, the type is so small now, but so you can small. Still read it.
If you can read it, if you need to, yeah, I don't really need to know what, you know, what day that is in February, and I can click it to zoom in and then find out then.
Yeah.
And so I do love in general that it's designed for Retina, and that's, I think, my favorite part. But I'm not sure if I think that that everything's getting out of the way except for the content.
Yeah.
I don't buy that. I see that as marketing crap. And I've said it before.
I mean, it's a worthy goal to make the user's content stand out. But I just think that this move, I just don't think it'll make that much of a change. People who made crappy apps that like gave your content very little room, that had three toolbars on top of each other, that had banner ads, they'll keep doing that, you know, because they're doing that for like mostly for business reasons, really, not for, you know, not because they don't know how to make a different toolbar. And then for Apple's own sort of guidance that they're providing with their apps, well, one problem that I'm having with that is that in many apps, my content is almost indistinguishable from the actual UI. Like in Mail, I mean, everything is, you know, black or gray Helvetica on white. And that this doesn't make my emails stand out more. It makes them stand out less. And in the Photos app, which now uses a white background throughout, including when you're looking at your photo, that to me is a clear regression in terms of how much of my photo I see. I used to see them on a black background. Now I see them on a white background.
But if we tap again, then it's on black.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But that's an additional tap, of course. And then the other thing is that the sort of the grid view in the Photos app shows fewer of my photos now, partly because they added those collections and moments and whatnot. But just the fact is that when I pull it up now, I see 9 photos. Before I could see way more. So yeah, the content first thing, it's not, it may not even, like marketing crap, I kind of agree. That's maybe a bit more cynical, might be more of a sort of theoretical goal that sounds great when you write it up. But it, I again, it's one of those things I'm just not totally seeing in the actual design of the app so far.
Is the use of translucency effective in that regard?
Depends on, I mean, if you have a specific example, like if you mean like the blurry toolbars, like the blurry toolbar in Maps, that actually distracts my eye more than anything I've ever seen in my life because it freaks me out. Slightly translucent toolbars. My position on those is I feel like every designer has at one point thought, you know what? What if we have no Chrome? And then somebody goes, okay, but you have to do a button. Okay, well, we'll put a button here. Oh, well, that's kind of hard to read against the photo. Oh, okay, I see. Okay, well, we'll put a toolbar. What if the toolbar is just, you know, slightly, you know, you can barely even see it. Oh, okay, well, that's still hard to read. Okay, what if we blur it? Oh, okay, well, that kind of looks like that. Okay, blur it more. And then eventually you get to a place where it's neither fish nor fowl. Like, it's so blurry that you can't actually tell what's behind it, and it just looks muddy. So it doesn't accomplish anything, in my view. I think it's one of those things that, yeah, where it sounds like something you describe, and then once you actually implement it, it just doesn't look that great.
Yeah, I sometimes, like, I'm looking for content to put behind the toolbar and see if I can see it, and then I'm disappointed that I can't see it, because it's, like, it's been blurred, and the contrast has been thrown way up, and it's been brightened the hell out of it. So it's, like, I do this in music a lot, where I'm just like, I wonder what this album art looks like behind the toolbar.
Right.
Nothing.
looks like a blurry mess, right?
Or, like, when I'm visiting a website that has a black background, how is it that the address bar is still pretty white?
This is a problem, though, that we got to witness with the Mac client for RDO. Because that came out, and they're like, what if it was all white? And it's like, well, actually, it's kind of hard to figure out which list item is a parent and which is a child. And like,
yeah.
Turns out color is useful for something.
Yeah.
Like, blocks of content, like, that delineate an area. My God, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, Google's web design, I feel like it's getting slightly better now, but about a year ago, it was mad because every website was Helvetica of the same point size with no underlines and no bold and no colors, I swear. And like, you would look at Gmail and you would go like, how do I change my settings? Does this switch to my inbox? Is it just a label saying that I'm in my inbox?
Yeah, they're really pushing color now because there's not much in the way of font size differentiation, not much in the way of bold. The only thing I'm seeing like really working is like color is either an action button, or if it's color with a chevron, then it's a navigation button. And that's what we're working with right now. Yeah. Sometimes it's pretty effective. Other times it's like just you're thinking, why isn't this blue? It's tappable. Why isn't it blue?
or it's blue and it's just the description text. Like,
when did that happen?
Well, it wasn't blue, it was red. I think, Nevin, you were sending this to me.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So I love the use of key color. I think that's awesome. And I particularly like the shade of like pinkish that they picked for the music app. Love that. But so the calendar app's key color, or whatever they call it, tint color, is red. So I went to add an event and I went to select the time, and my time was shown in red. And I'm like, oh, that means I can't pick that time. There's an overlapping event or something. And I spent a good minute trying to figure it out. And then I realized, oh no, that's just the tint color for this app. So red means that it's the selected text. Red text has always meant error or conflict or alert, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but
No, you're not crazy at all. That's generally why you don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's weird that they're holding on to a legacy from iCal. iCal 1.0 is like, oh, just has that red thing on the icon.
Well, yeah. And this is what I meant, though, is that it's just currently the selected one. I mean, the whole cell is, yes, tappable. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just telling you this is what you're manipulating right now, instead of just being black or whatever.
I don't remember if it was one of you, but I saw a tweet that also showed a snippet of text, and the question was whether it indicated current state, whether it was an action that you could do, or whether it was a descriptor. And alongside a bunch of other text, it was impossible to tell.
Oh, that was what's his name on Binary Bonsai? That was a really good post
about the music app, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that one of those is a classic conundrum.
Yes.
Does this icon describe state or action? That's like a
And like one. People were making that argument about iTunes on the desktop like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Where it's like, when I tap this button, when I tap the play button, it turns to a pause button. So it's indicating action. But the shuffle button doesn't.
Yep.
So like the shuffle is either on or off, and it's showing state. And it's like, you can't. It's really hard to solve that problem.
You can definitely tell they're changing some of the verbiage used throughout the system, though, for the buttons. I mean, mm-hmm. things inside Photo now, there isn't the action button at the top. It just says select, and select is now the button. And that's really fascinating, because they're using it as a verb, like, hey, select, then do these things. And it's like, all right, well, okay.
Yeah, they have made so many subtle improvements that it's like, you know, that's why I wrote that post about our gut reaction just being kind of like, oh shit, this feels foreign, I don't like it, is that they've made so many improvements. Like, instead of the stupid chevron button that's been around since day one that looks exactly like every other chevron but does something different, now it's an information button. And that's what I meant the whole time.
The chevron button was the worst. Okay.
Yeah, the detailed disclosure guy with the blue circle. Yeah.
It's like, normally you have a chevron, but if the chevron has a circle around it, it means something else.
Yeah, I always wanted to use those and like trying to explain that to a client and be like, no, this is a different one. I swear, it's going to work.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good idea.
And it's a thing where users saw the blue button, but it's a difficult thing to explain. It's a difficult thing to explain that it does something differently.
Now, I do want to talk about, I don't want to dovetail from your thing about like gut reaction into Nevin's post about the grid being wrong, because I thought that was super interesting. Nevin, so you've now had that blog out in the world, that blog post. How's the reaction been to that? Or maybe you should summarize it first before we dive right in.
Oh, the summary of it is that Johnny Ive, apparently, that's what Apple told us, created this grid that you use as a guideline grid for creating new icons. And the goal of that makes sense to me. They want to make sure that all the icons look harmonious. However, I think that the actual grid that they chose to use, and by the way, you could have drawn any number of grids on there with any, with a different mathematical justification for it. The one that he picked, I think, is not helpful, in the sense that the largest shape that it gives you, the large circle, is far too large. And icons that are drawn to that grid, like Safari or all the store apps, or even the Messages app icon, simply look too big. They're coming close to that edge. It's kind of uncomfortable. And I called it wrong, which I know is a harsh word to use, but the way I justify that is by saying, if I show this to any icon designer in the world now, they will look at that and go, yep, the circle is too big. And that, to me, like when you aggregate all of that, that I think adds up to it simply being the wrong thing.
I mean, it's not even icon designers. That's what I think is interesting. It's like how to put something on a door. Like if you put a circle that big on a door, it would be too big. Don't do that. Like it's actually like in general, there are rules, and it is don't get that close.
Like a logo on a t-shirt.
A logo on a t-shirt. Yeah.
Don't get too close to the edges.
Yeah. I have this problem all the time. And like when we do logos for people, we make these big style guides, and like we always included the style guide. Like keep that away from the edges of everything. Like always, like at least a quarter of the size of the logo.
And then they never bother paying attention to that style guide again.
What's funny is I actually like the clock icon. Like I'm fine with that shape.
Yes. And I think part of the problem, the reason that the clock works is that if you had a physical clock, it would probably look something like that. And the reason for that is since it's a physical object, the face just needs to be as big as possible, right? The same thing that on your iPhone, the bezel should be as small as possible. It doesn't matter how like, you know, how well it fits, you know, so much. It just matters that you get as much screen as possible. But that's not what icons do, especially when you have a grid of 20 icons, you know, the point is not for each icon to be the biggest, because you don't want to have one icon win over the others. You want them all to look harmonious. Or like keypads on phones, for instance, you know, you have like, 9 or 12 of them. Imagine if every, you know, digit extended all the way to the edges of the button, that would just look.
And one of the points you had, Nevin, I thought was really excellent, was that, you know, a lot of this is instinct and you feel the weighting. The clock can be weighted bigger because it looks natural, where when you weight something else on the same grid arbitrarily, it looks just unwieldy and uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so you asked about the reaction. The reaction has been like well over 95% people just saying something like, oh yeah, you know, I thought the same thing when I saw them. And then, you know, maybe 5% from people basically just saying that, you know, it's silly of me to just say that, you know, my subjective opinion on this is right versus someone else's. Whenever I look these people up, by the way, not one of them is a designer, which I'm not trying to be elitist about this, but presumably designers get paid to be designers because they're good at it, right? So that's my only defense.
I'm worried about it from a client perspective. If that's how big the camera and FaceTime icon are, that all the people that I work with are going to want an icon that's just that big as well.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't want to do
and,
it.
You know, the icon size already got bigger. It was at 114 and now it's at 120. So technically it's a little bit bigger already.
That's the other thing about the grids. There was one of those number file videos that you, Clark, sent me the other day about like how 12 is way better as a base than 10.
Mm, so and, like, divisible.
Yeah, and that's what the 120 is divisible by 2, 3, 4. Like, it's, you know, you just keep going, like, so many numbers.
Yeah.
You can make so many grids from 120.
Yeah.
And they went with a weird one.
Yeah. They went with one that was based around where the rounded rectangle, like, was pinched on the corners. Like, that's where they drew, like, the horizontal and vertical rules. That's how they determined the largest circle shape, was where that last point in the curve
was. Now, to be fair, you flip over a Mac Mini.
Yeah. I looked at this today. You flip over a Mac Mini, you put that grid on top, and the circle is that size in relationship to the square on the bottom of the Mac Mini where you open it up to put in different RAM.
Gotta love it. The bottom of Mac Minis.
I know. It's really aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, but it's, you know, right.
Like, and it's sitting next to 15 other Mac Minis that you're trying to look.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different thing. It's cute that there's that connection there, but it doesn't really mean anything. Right?
No,
we could point to a number of other circles within round rex, and it's not the same thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like, for me, if you look at the home button on all of our devices, it's in a circle and there's a square inside of it. It's like the reverse, right? And that square, I mean, like, can we start taking bets right now that square will be just like as big as possible inside that circle?
No!
It'll match the physical size of the icons on the screen.
That's right. That's right. I mean, okay. It doesn't make any sense. There's a reason that even inside of that shape it is that size. And that's because it fits comfortably. It's like, it's harmonious. Those two shapes work well together.
Right.
God, we're complaining.
What do you guys think about the switch to text? And they mentioned specifically that, for example, they took out the boundaries around buttons, so there's no more back button with, you know, the lines around it. Now it's just the word back.
I think the loss of boundaries is actually super great. My initial gut reaction was just like, oh my god, round rex, afford pushing. And like, that is true. Like, given our vocabulary and design for the last 30 years, round rex afford pushing, but everything can be so much closer now if you're just using white space as your guide for screen layout, that it's like there are a lot of places where if you cut the screen into chunks of 44, like you're stacking toolbars on top of each other, and then you put little round rect bar buttons inside of all of those, and you had a grid of 25 of those, like, it would look horrendous. There'd be so many lines and so little content, but you could put 25 text labels on screen in a grid of 5x5 very nicely, and no one would barf. Like, it's too many lines, like, create this problem. And you can look at it, if you look at the music players now playing screen side by side on the two operating systems, it's the new music player now playing screen is just a lot cleaner, even though it has all the same information on it. Hmm. They just seem to have gotten rid of a lot of dividing lines.
So yeah, it just has less noise.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're feeling. I think there's also another interesting thing, which is classically when we had built buttons, we were seeking like the most amount of affordance. Like, what are all the possible angles we can hit?
Mm-hmm.
Different color, different depth, like different gradient, different, you know, text underline, all that crap. And the reason why was so that if someone just picks this up, hopefully they'll be able to figure it out within 2 seconds. That's the goal.
We're taking like design gestalt for like trying to differentiate foreground from background and using everything in our disposal.
Every single thing we can. So then there's another school of thought, which is, seems like what this is more aimed at, which is, well, what if it took you a little bit longer to figure it out?
Yeah, like, what the if very first time.
Yeah. What if, like, it takes you a couple months to figure out that you can click the weather description inside Notification Center, and you don't, even though you don't know it, like, is that okay?
By the way, you can do that.
Like, maybe that's okay. And, like, that there's an interesting standpoint to come at it with.
It is interesting, though incredibly hypocritical, when you open Control Center and everything has a button around it. All four of the, you know, the things on the bottom, the five things on the top. I mean, we got controls on controls in there.
There's always iOS 8.
There's always iOS 8. We'll fix that in iOS 8.
Yeah, it seems like there are plenty of places where they have put a circle. They're big on circles right now.
Mm-hmm.
They've put a lot of circles around buttons in like the phone dialer and the lock screen.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, cutting down on the borders, and I don't know, like the color as an affordance, like assuming that they're using it consistently, it's working out.
So what about in cases like notes where they show you yellow on top of white?
Well, that's just silly.
I mean, that's one of the biggest complaints is that iOS kind of sucked a lot of the contrast out of everything from icons to interface, and that makes it less glanceable and less usable on distances.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. True. I think you're going to, especially for third-party designers, people are always going to be able to shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, even podcasts, like first-party app. Podcasts from Apple is such a dark app that in bright sunlight, you can't use it. There is so little contrast in that, and yet it has all the hallmarks of like classic Apple design.
Well, all those stockholders that are using the new Stocks app, we're going to figure out from all of them how many of them are checking the app outside.
That should be a mood. I mean, if clocks can tick, that should be a mood icon that switches from black to red depending on your portfolio.
Exactly. There's one thing that I've been saying, like a little a mean thing, which is when people are like, I can't tell that's a button. And they've been like, is it, can you not tell it's a button? Are you having that problem? Mm-hmm. Or are you extrapolating that out and you think someone else isn't going to know that's a button?
Do you think your grandma doesn't know it's a
button? Yeah, no, you might be right. But like that, it is an interesting thing that we all, as designers, we all slip into on accident where it's like, I don't know what about this. And it's like, well, actually, I do. I know how to use it. And so that's why I talk about that. Like maybe it's training. Like maybe we say like, let's make it simpler, but then we can make it way denser and then it'll be way harder to get. But then in like 4 years, we'll have everyone on board. And like, it's a gamble.
Yeah. And that's the gamble that they've already taken where they've just said, yeah, you know what? We sold 500 million of these things. We think that people get this genre of computing in a way that they never got desktop computing. Mm-hmm. Like they get direct manipulation. They get the idea that they should just poke at stuff. And the safety of this operating system just means you can't destroy anything. It's like when I was a kid and our parents, like, I don't know how they got a computer on our desks, but they got us a computer and they're terrified that we would make it explode. And they were terrified that they would make it explode just by sitting next to it wrong. But they've just, nobody has that fear with iOS. Everything just seems to be pretty safe and people just poke at the screen, assuming that something good will happen. And most of the time they're right.
I have the one thing that occurred to me. Well, what if we, you know, what if we sacrifice some of the discoverability, but in turn we gain like more, you know, maybe it looks more elegant. Maybe it looks cleaner. Maybe it improves legibility. Maybe we can fit more controls on the screen. And I totally agree with that. And I actually really like sort of the simplification of that aspect of the UI, removing a lot of bars on top of bars, that sort of depth. One thing I'm wondering though is, how does this design translate to, say, the iPad or even beyond that? How does an app that simply needs a lot of buttons look like if it adopts this aesthetic? Now, I don't know if Apple is saying that it has to, but what does it look like if it does do that? Like, what does, imagine, you know, 5 years from now, we have like a 15-inch iOS device, or imagine if this goes to the Mac, what does an app like Photoshop look like within this aesthetic? Something that needs a ton of controls, a ton of hierarchy, a ton of, you know, state indication. Is that doable in this aesthetic?
I was going to say Apple TV would be the crazy one, but I don't think you could, because you have to have selection and you got to have buttons.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's indirect manipulation. You have to have selection state that moves around.
Yeah.
But I'm actually super grateful that you said discoverability there, Nevin, because the word that's come up a bunch is usability. People are just like, oh, the lack of round rects makes it less usable. But I don't think it's any less usable. In your day-to-day, this is not harder to use or slower to use or more error-prone. It is a little less learnable. You don't just pick it up and immediately grok what it's about, but you learn it pretty quickly, and then you go on your happy way, and you just use it for the rest of your life without thinking. So, like, there's that strong distinction between learnability and usability. And this is nowhere, you know, this is not a less usable operating system.
And while that's true, that doesn't necessarily mean that all of those people won't complain about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, of course, whenever Facebook changes their quote-unquote layout, everyone has to complain about it and say, well, this isn't there, and this is like this now, and why did you put this here and change it back? I didn't ask for this.
Yeah. And me and Clarko and some other friends were in Australia when they changed from iOS 6 to 7. And five to six. And no one upgraded. Remember this?
Oh, yeah.
No one upgraded to iOS 6.
Everyone in Australia was terribly afraid that maps would kill them.
So what do you think about the use of the ultralight version of Helvetica and the use of Helvetica in general in this interpretation?
Sure.
My joke has always been like, oh, look at that Helvetica ultralight. You're such a designer. There's even a Willy Wonka of that.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there is a mode in settings somewhere for like improved readability. And then you check that and then it turns back to regular. I think it's funny.
Or just light.
or one of those.
But from Helvetica to the glyphs, they've gone for an incredibly light design overall.
Yeah. I'm going to come out and say that using Helvetica Noia Lite for most of the body copy is just a straight up mistake. And again, just to offer some justification for that, I'm going to say that for decades of design in all sorts of media, people have saved that for large display copy, not for body copy. And the best way that I can put it is, why aren't Apple's printed materials set in Helvetica Noia Lite? Because it doesn't read well. And putting it on a screen does not help that. It's actually worse. Even it doesn't matter if it's a Retina screen or not. So I just don't like it. When you switch that readability, you know, setting on, it's instantly more readable. I, with perfectly good eyesight, should not have to do that to make my phone more readable. That's just how I feel. If anybody else thinks that light is as readable, I'd love to hear that.
I use Twitterific as my Twitter client. I love it. Twitterific. Icon Factory. You guys share that. And one of the things that I love about it is that you can change the font and size of the text in the app. They make the whole app very customizable. But since I kind of suck at reading, I've just made it so big that I can only see two tweets per page before I have to scroll, which I love, because then I can read it at an arm's length without like being absorbed into my phone. So I'm a big fan of gigantic text, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at large sizes, Helvetica Noir Light works just fine. But trying to read my emails and messages in it, especially messages where it's set in white on bright blue, I think is close to a disaster, basically.
Well, now when you send emails, just make sure you bold the text before you...
There we go.
Well, I mean, it's nice and large on the lock screen, but then it's sort of medium-sized on the calendar icon, and then it's really, really small inside some of the apps. And exactly what you said, the lightness, along with the lack of contrast and supersaturation, all kind of teams up to make that glanceability much less than it was previously.
I would have to say so. And I think... I gave myself a little assignment of seeing what like classic print designers are saying about iOS 7 and like people who are actually used to working in a, you know, let's say minimal, you know, style with black and white and with lots of white space. And I'm not finding a lot of them who are saying, wow, what a win. They're using Helvetica Noir Light. Finally, excellent typography on iOS. I don't think that anyone who's an authority on type would say that.
Louis, that kind of brings me to the next part of clarity, and that's something that you've been talking about quite a bit, the icons.
Yeah. What about them? What do you want to know? What do you want to know?
Well, I saw your dribble where you took a stab at sort of normalizing them. I don't know if that's the right word, but the icons have gotten a lot of flack because, you know, the gradients go in different directions. There's different types of gradients. There's different weighting. There's different styles to them. Does it look more like a wireframe to you, or does this look just like an inconsistent icon interface?
Well, I mean, I don't know much about the process. You know, I mean, being outside Apple now, it's definitely different. I don't get to see all that sorts of stuff. And I just suspect that, you know, the process of going about doing these is incredibly difficult. I mean, you know that no matter what, everyone's going to have a very strong reaction to it just changing in general. I mean, when they introduced diagonal stripes, I think every designer barfed just the same. And it's just that's it's just the same. It's the same exact barf every time.
Oh, we compared, yeah.
We totally did.
Took samples.
But now the difference is that that's a skeuomorphic barf and this one's a flat barf. But in any case, I think that right now there's just a lack of a visual contrast between all of them. There's a really interesting color choice that I'm not sure I agree with right now. And you know, the whole point it seemed to be about bringing harmony to all the system icons. And I don't think that really any third-party designer or developer needs to adhere to those because we don't need to look like a system app. We never really have. There's definitely some apps that try to so that they, you know, look at home on the system. But I mean, you're not going to see like Angry Birds or any game really like making their icon look like iOS defaults. I think the thing that I was trying to accomplish was create a color scheme that was more harmonious amongst all of them just by eyeballing it. And if I were to venture a guess, you know, just that they had a grid system for their icons, perhaps they had some other mathematical way to try to figure out the colors as well. I would not be surprised. And I think that a lot of this has to be done, like Nevin was talking about with visual weight of the icons. You kind of have to just do what feels right. And I wanted to redraw certain shapes and pick colors out from scratch and try to really get something that felt right amongst all of them. And I mean, I don't know, it's not a prescription. I'm not, you know, advising anyone at Apple to do it. It's just, I had a creative itch that I needed to figure out what was going on.
Does your creative itching ever stop?
No.
She does.
I should.
It's a cream, I think.
Yeah, creative cream.
Louis' icons, by the way, were beautiful. I think they're fantastic. And I think the other thing that I like about them is that they nail all of what I think of as sort of classic fundamentals of icon design. It's just like good, solid work. It's not trying to be, you know, extravagant or super cool. They're cute without really having any, you know, smiley faces in them or anything. They just feel friendly. And you know, people have accused me a lot of like, oh, you know, you're complaining about this because you don't like change. Had they switched to Louis icons, I would have like stood up and clapped at WWDC. So that's the sort of thing where I think like, you know, the sort of first instincts that we sometimes have about these, there's something to it.
Well, Nevin, I have to admit now, because now you said you would stand up and clap if they switched those icons. I made the iOS 7 icons that they shipped.
Is that the reverse mirror universe, Louis, with the goatee saying that?
You're off the podcast.
Although I did like it when I looked at that drawl page. I liked that it was a rebound of something that you did a long time ago.
Yes.
And also switching back, like opening that in tab and switching back and forth, just going, oh my God, old style was so much stuff.
There's it's incredibly gaudy, and we totally had gradients and shadows and reflections and outer glows, and we were using every layer style we could. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It looks really fun, but if you're trying to get clarity across, if you're trying to make someone understand what it is, you don't need all of those things. But yeah, I think there was just fundamental shapes about those app icons. If I was to use one as an example, it would be Safari. Safari, for a long time, both Mac and iOS, had a very distinct like compass rose with the needle in the middle. And they kind of did away with that compass rose and instead made a jumbo circle that was blue with the outside being white. And I think they took away what was the Safari icon for 10 years prior.
Silly bastards.
you said it, not me.
Actually, I remember the day that one of you two came to me, like, clapping and skipping. It was probably Brad. That sounds like him. Saying, I got to use bevel and emboss today. I found a way to use bevel and emboss.
It's true. Because I smack people for using that.
Yeah. I do the same with satin, and then I got excited. I can finally use satin, and I can use it in a way that doesn't make you cringe.
I was just about to ask about satin.
One of the things that's always frustrated me from like an outside perspective, especially on Dribbble, has been when people kind of like badmouth our work, like it doesn't have enough layer effects. As if we don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
That's always the part that makes me mad. I know how to do all the layer effects. I can do them. And I chose not to for this project.
Yeah.
Is always how it is.
And it's interesting because for the iOS icons that I just drew the other day, they actually use a lot of layer effects. It's just they're very subtle. You know, I have a bevel and emboss on that entire icon. But it's like a
6%?
3%. Yeah, it's like a 3% actually. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if you look at the sum total of where they are so far, and I'll start with you, Chris, what makes you most excited about iOS 7 in terms of being a designer and going to be someone who's making third-party apps?
I'm excited about custom transitions. I think that like the stuff that they've done for calendar and photos is just kind of like just touching the surface of like, oh, whoa, we used to have, I don't know, 8, 12 canned transitions that we could use reliably. And, you know, we're not getting away from push anytime soon. If you go further down the navigation hierarchy, you're pretty much moving left to right. Everyone understands that and also the back button kind of makes sure that you have to. But I think the ability to just spice that up a bit, the way that I was talking about earlier with the iPad Photos app and the way that, calendar act kind of like a Zooey, like it's, you know, you're just progressively zooming into deeper layers of detail.
What about Game Center? That one is the craziest transition.
Oh, yeah. Well, that seems like it's a video. I don't know what the hell that is.
I don't think it's a video, man.
I'm excited for you to incorporate that in your later apps.
Bubbles.
I'm excited at the prospect of just like being able to push engineers to do cooler stuff. The system seems to be more geared to us doing cooler things with interaction and animation than it was before.
Without having to be a game developer who can write it all in OpenGL yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I have been waiting for so long for Blur to become more cool. Every time there would be one of the like new SDK announcements, I would always look at that big tag cloud full of new features and just be looking for Gaussian Blur. We finally got it, but then by the time we got it, it's like, actually, it performs like ass. But I'm excited in the new iOS 7 because now, I mean, it's not any cooler, like in terms of like APIs, but since it is so prevalent in the OS, I think that'll make a lot more people use Blurs, and I think that's really cool. Blur.
I'm excited about the new icons, honestly. I mean, I know that we were just kind of talking about it earlier, but I'm really excited about the new corner radius. It sounds so nerdy. I'm really excited about the corner radius of the new icon.
Super ellipses.
It's kind of cool. It's definitely visually appealing. I actually kind of like that change. What's a little annoying is that they're now 120 pixels and the radius is slightly different, but
that just means I get to redraw everything, which I love doing so much.
Do you wish there were 128, or are you happy?
I'm okay with that. They're 120. I mean, 128 would be certainly nice, but I don't think that would be as comfortable.
No,
that probably would
be
very claustrophobic.
Pixel border.
Each one of them. Yeah.
I know that you just like to work in binary numbers.
I do.
I like the reset of this. I like that a reset button has been hit, and I'm not necessarily a huge fan of, you know, where we landed in every respect. A lot of it is fantastic, but I like that we get to sort of, you know, retry things. I feel like there's been a trend for at least the past 2 years of pretty much every every well-known, well-received app out there being all custom anyway. And I feel like it would be sort of awkward when you would see those apps and then they would have a very sort of administrative view, like, you know, settings or something like that. And then you fall back into, you know, old iOS stock UI and then you'd go like, okay. And then on the other hand, a lot of apps would like do their own, you know, like settings type UI and then they would overdo it. So I like that the reset button is such that when people do their own custom UIs, hopefully they'll make them a little more subtle. Like you don't have to beat Apple by being more, you know, effecty. You can also beat them by being simpler. And then the other thing, and this is conspiracy theory time now, is that I've been thinking about like, why this change? Why so suddenly? Why only like a 7-month development cycle for it? And one thing I've come up with is that perhaps this new design, which again, doesn't always feel at home on my iPhone, 5, whatever it is right now, maybe it will feel more at home on future devices. Maybe there's something about either this, you know, very next generation of iOS devices or the one after it that's going to justify it, basically. Maybe they'll switch to a new screen technology that'll make Helvetica Neue Lite actually read better. Maybe something about these colors that, you know, where they might look a little off right now, maybe they'll look better on the new display. Maybe the push towards auto layout, you know, the thing where, you know, basically you should assume as little as possible about the size of your display. Maybe that means there are more form factors for iOS coming. So I'm hoping this is my, you know, one thing I'm holding on to is that maybe all of this is sort of just setting the base layer for a bigger change that'll come later hardware wise.
Yeah, this would look great on e-ink.
Or on some rounded foldable iPad you can stick in your pocket and then bevel gesture your way through at will.
I love seams on my display. That's why I really want that.
I want to take that idea about future hardware and just run with it, Nevin, that like, I wonder if they've felt very constrained in recent years when they make very small devices like the iPod Nano, and they're expected to have it visually on par with the iPhone, and mm-hmm. they bust their things,
butts.
Asses,
butts.
Butts.
They bust their butts to make it look slightly like the real thing, even though it's a tiny processor chugging away in there.
Remember CoverFlow?
Yeah. You know, with this like mildly simpler aesthetic, if you take the blur out, that's way easier to draw.
So, and we have no shadows, you know, yeah. Less shadows on the icon that if they didn't exist, like you wouldn't notice that much on a different device.
Yeah, well, so you potentially start doing this UI, something that looks very much like this UI, on a really ultra low power device, and it still feels just as good. Like, you know, what you're saying, like e-ink, if you took all the color out of this, took all the blur out of it, it would actually look and feel just fine on e-ink, assuming they got the redraw not looking crap.
Or if maybe they move to wearable technology, they'll be able to push screens. You know, Google Now has always talked about in terms of wearable stuff or Siri's interface in terms of small screens.
Yeah, like ultra-low power devices could look pretty decent with this UI.
And that was the whole point of why Android looked like that, mm-hmm. was because they didn't have the horsepower to do a lot of things, yeah. Which was why then the iPhone had to go in the polar opposite. Was to say, look, no, we have the craziest screens. We can do all these crazy, crazy graphics. Mm-hmm. And now it's just kind of coming to the logical conclusion, which was where Android was the whole time, but because of a technological limitation.
The cell strength indicator is interesting.
Yes.
That's all I got. It's interesting. It's weird.
What do you think about Apple? I mean, they were very careful about sort of leaving the spatiality of the icons. Like, if your mom switches to iOS 7, her phone icon might look different, but it's still her phone icon. It's still on the springboard. It's on the home screen. All that kind of stuff stayed the same. Do you think Apple still has years of the app-based launcher home screen? Because everyone else seems to be switching to something else now.
I'm super over it on my iPad. Like, I want those icons to be huge. I want it to do something different.
Yeah, I would actually like more for my iPad to look more like my Apple TV.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's got like these just jumbo icons that are really filling up all of the space.
Here's my last three movies I played in Netflix. Yeah. Like, here's the thing.
They don't
I
need to be 300 pixels away from each other. It's okay.
That's silly. Yeah. Yeah. But the phone, I don't know. It works really well for the phone.
And you want like live updating tiles that just show you what exact state of your app at all times.
I mean, it would be nice for weather, but I mean, like, I think that like it's we got that for clock, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like right? As like, as like a small thing, if I could have like five different icons that I can choose when it goes between the five,
sure.
Like,
yeah.
And so I don't want people to screw it up.
No. Well, what you really want is you want to make sure that you, Brad Ellis, get to design any icon that ever animates.
I got to make a living.
I got
mythical kids to feed.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because if you gave third-party developers the ability to just dynamically change their app icons.
Oh, I've ruined myself.
Yeah, you're going to get ads and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, they would change it to like Facebook to trick you into launching it by accident.
Oh,
like, you have to assume that every third-party developer is a butthead.
Stupid third-party developers.
Nevin, anything else on your list?
Well, you know, I like that the OS on the phone pretty much has kept, you know, not the metrics, but yeah, the positioning of things and most of the metaphors are about the same. I think that's good. I like where they're going with some of the things that sort of got a lot less press. Like Notification Center now is sort of coming after Google Now, I feel. I mean, it's so much smaller. It's so much simpler. Obviously, you can't compare the two. Google Now is clearly a much, you know, more elaborate system. But Notification Center is trying to do that with that today view that tells you, here's the date. Traffic is such and such between, you know, the two places that you usually go. Your next appointment is this. And, you know, it doesn't tell you the weather, but let's say in the future, it tells you the weather. I feel like this sort of thing, if they move a little bit more in that direction, I'll be very happy. So I like that. It's an interesting detail.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you guys so much. Chris, where can we find out more about you and your work?
You can probably find out a little about my work, but more about like what I ate for lunch at twitter.com/Clarko. Or you could very infrequently read my thoughts at releasecandidate1.com.
You can find me on the Twitters. My username is Brad Ellis or pacifichelm.com.
You can read about Disneyland at Mantia.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to see what kind of work we're doing, pacifichelm.com.
And you also have a very nice collection of stuff at Mantia.me.
That's right, Mantia.me.
Awesome. Nevin?
You can read stupid jokes on Twitter at Mergan, M-R-G-A-N. You can read stupid nerdy things on app.net, also username at Mergan. And then Mergan.com, M-R-G-A-N.com, is my blog that has less frequently posted stupid things.
And once in a while you do stuff for Panic, right?
Yes. I also work at Panic, panic.com. Go there and buy your software because it's super cool and your friends will think you're the most awesome person.
Buy all the software.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you guys so much. And Louis, I forgot to pimp Camera Noir, but it is a fantastic replacement for everybody who misses the Gotham filter from Instagram.
Yes.
So buy that too. Just make a list right now of all the stuff you want to shop for. Thank you guys so much. I look forward to maybe we'll do this again when iOS 7 ships and we get to see the final version.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.